Blog Talk Radio.
Bienvenidos al programa Pasos, conducido por el Dr. Damián Goldberg, que los invita a compartir una hora de reflexión sobre nuestra vida laboral. ¿Cómo podemos alcanzar bienestar, satisfacción y resultados en un ámbito laboral confortable, ameno y saludable? ¿Cómo podemos alcanzar balance entre nuestra vida en el trabajo y en nuestros hogares? Prepárese para un diálogo desafiante con el Dr. Damián Goldberg.
Welcome to Pasos, an internet radio program conducted by Dr. Damián Goldberg from Los Angeles, California. Damián invites you once a week to share this space to reflect on your work life. How can we achieve results, satisfaction and well-being at work? How can we find balance between our work and personal life? Prepare for challenging dialogue with Dr. Damián Goldberg and his guests, who are thought leaders from all over the world.
Hey, welcome to Pasos. This is Dr. Damián Goldberg. Today is Tuesday, 8th of July, from Los Angeles, California, and you got the opportunity to listen our introduction in two languages today. And I am very excited because in this program we have a colleague of mine, Josh Alan Dijkstra, who is going to be joining us to talk about his new book, Igniting the Invisible Tribe. For people who are listening to us for first time, Pasos is a program that we started at the beginning of the year. The first 25 programs were in Spanish. Now we're switching to English. And the goal of Pasos, or steps, is to discuss issues related to well-being at work, how we can create work cultures where people can get not only results, but also satisfaction, well-being. And Josh's book is exactly about that, and it's a perfect match for the goal that we have in this talk show. Josh is a colleague from, he lives like me in Los Angeles, California. I got to meet him in one of the ASTD, the Association for Training and Development in Los Angeles a few years ago. He has been collaborating in my coaching training program for the Center for Nonprofit Management locally. He has been doing sessions on around the Strength Finder. He is an author, a speaker, a consultant. He's the founder of Strength Doctor, a consulting firm that helps leaders and entrepreneurs designing, energizing company cultures. And I want to welcome Josh to the show today. Josh, welcome to our show, and thank you for being part of this today.
Oh, thanks so much for having me, Damian. It's a pleasure.
Yeah, so I got the chance to go to some of your presentations, and you're an excellent speaker and presenter, and now I know that you're also an excellent writer. I got the chance to read your book, and I love your book. I think it's a great book. I highly recommend it to people, and it completely aligns with the goal that I have with this program, this radio talk show, since the beginning of the year. That is exactly how we can create organizational cultures where people can, as I said, not only get results, but also well-being, get the best of them, satisfaction, well-being, all of that as an opportunity to look at work from a different angle, and your book does exactly that, presents like a paradigm shift in terms of how to look workplaces and organizations. I am curious, how did you get to write this book?
Yeah. Well, first of all, thanks. I'm glad you enjoyed it. And it was definitely a labor of love, as I suppose most books are. I started this one as a project for grad school. So in my grad school program, I didn't have to do a thesis or something like that. I had to do a project. And for my project, I pitched to my advisors, hey, what if I wrote a book on kind of the changing state of business in the world? And so also to put this in context, I was going to grad school in the years 2008, 2009, so we could all kind of remember the chaos that was happening in the global economy during that time period. And So the big question for me that I wanted to answer was what in the world is happening to business? And I had a suspicion that there was something that was much deeper than just the financial crisis going on. That's kind of how it manifested, I think, on the surface. But deep below that, I had this sense that there was something much bigger at play. And I wanted to figure out what it was. And so I kind of embarked on this multi-year research study, took all sorts of twists and turns and for me to try to answer that question of what was happening to business. And eventually I was able to connect some dots and put some ideas together in the form of the book. So there we go.
That's great. It's interesting that you go from describing the way that things are to the way that things could be. And for that, it's necessary what you call a work revolution. How, for people who have not read the book, how would you explain that paradigm shift from where we are to where we may go or where we should go or where we can go?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, and so I would say that this book is kind of, it's not a how-to book, it's actually a why-to book. It explains kind of why things are happening the way that they are and hopefully gives people an idea of why the marketplace has changed so dramatically in the last 5 to 10 years. And so I really wanted to describe this shift that's occurring in hopefully really easy to read terms so people wouldn't have to go and do a 4-year-long research study like I did, but they could just pick up this book and get a clear sense of, okay, now I've had some intuitive sense that things were changing, but hopefully this packages it in a way that's cohesive. And so when I talk about a work revolution, I know the word revolution probably conjures up all sorts of different images for people, but I don't mean it in a violent way. I know people might think about guns and violence when they think revolution, but I don't mean it that way when I say work revolution. I mean revolution in the very literal sense. So the literal Latin word for revolution means a complete turnaround. So in the sense of like the earth does a revolution around the sun, it's a complete turnaround. And I think what we're experiencing right now in the workplace is that we really kind of need a complete turnaround in the way that we're working, because it's not really working very well. You know, stress is off the charts. Well-being is really it's down the tubes. Engagement is terrible. Passion in the workplace is almost non-existent. And so when we think about kind of the purpose for this show, Damien, about creating more places of well-being for people to work, right now it's pretty dismal in the workplace. And no matter how you measure well-being, it's a pretty sad state of affairs. And so that's what I mean by a work revolution, is we need to turn that around. And so the majority of people can work in a place that actually makes their life better instead of making it worse.
Mm. Yeah, I really like to see how you describe the two different realities. And what would you suggest? In here, there are some rules to describe this new world, and use the work environment as a word, like a reality. You talk about five new rules. Do you want to share with us a little bit about the rules?
Yeah, absolutely. And so the book has got 5 sections to it, and it kind of talks about some of these new perspectives. And, one of them is new rules, and there's 5 of those in there as well. One of them that I'll definitely like to talk about a little bit is rule number 5, which is to be more connected, human, and meaningful. And so when you look at the state of the workplace today, and you think about kind of what makes organizations successful and what creates value. So if you look at what creates value in an organization, you can kind of sort of think about what's scarce. So if you think about things that are scarce and they create value, and so for a long time certain things were scarce and it made those things very valuable in the marketplace. And so it's kind of economics, basic economics kind of principles. And through my research, what I found was that there's a new set of principles that kind of show us what's scarce in the marketplace now. And it's these 3 things. It's to be more connected, more human, and more meaningful. And I can unpack those really quickly. So essentially, one thing that's very scarce is our ability to connect with each other. And this is why, so people, essentially, people want to be more connected. And this is why you see companies like Facebook thriving, because all they do is connect people. You look at companies like Airbnb or Instagram or just about any tech startup for the most part. What they're doing is they're creating new ways to connect people, and people can't get enough of it. It's a scare. We feel this kind of scarcity around connection in our lives. And so the more that your company can do to connect people to each other, the more successful they'll be. And so that's one of the rules here. The second one would be about being more human. And so what this is about is this is a pretty scarce resource in our organizations. I don't think we have to look very far to see that most of our organizations don't actually treat people like people. They don't treat them like human beings. They kind of treat them like machines. They don't treat customers even very well in most companies. And so the organizations that do really stand out. So you look at a place like Zappos, which is just this fanatical focus on customer service. And they really treat human like their customers like human beings. And it really pays off for them in a really big way. And so
Josh, are you familiar with the work from the Arbinger Institute, The Anatomy of Peace and the Leadership and Self-Deception books? Because they are really, when I was reading this piece about being human, the work that they do is how people treat each other as objects instead of humans. It's really interesting to see that point, that many times we relate to other people, not really as human beings, but as objects that we need to do things. I was in China last week. I was sharing with you, and I had to do a session for managers, and it was about coaching skills for managers. And I was bringing this. I was asking them, do you treat your people in your organization as human beings? Do you treat them the way that you like to be treated? Do you connect with them with all of their passion, energy, and engagement, or do you just see them as objects to accomplish your goals?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, you're so right on. I think that's exactly what happens is we do kind of get stuck in that trap. And I think that the big challenge, I'd love to get your thoughts on this, but I think that the big challenge there is that actually inhibits our success, right? So it's, you know, we think we're being kind of productive when we're just like getting the work done, or we're, you know, focused on the task or whatever, but it actually ends up being pretty counterproductive for the organization in the long term, because those relationships, that humanity is kind of what makes things work together. It makes them sticky. You
know? Yeah. And you have the third one is about being meaningful. What I really love, you know, all of it's about finding purpose.
I think that one's huge. I think that that's another area of clear scarcity. You know, so we talk about kind of all these statistics that are just dismal, whether it's passion or well-being or engagement or whatever. To me, that indicates a huge lack of meaningfulness. Right? We're not connected to our work in any meaningful way, and it shows. You know, it really does come out. And so the lesson here, I think, is that if a company, if your organization, or even in your career, if you're a coach or a consultant, the more you can help people make meaning from their career, the more you help them thrive, because that's really what kind of gives them more energy to do it.
You share examples of Apple, Tom's, and Semco on your book. That would be interesting if you know any stories that can be interesting to people listening to us that may be models for them to apply in their organization. You know, because as you said before, the book is not about the how, it's about the what. But many times people want to know the how they can create this, how they can make their companies more connected, human, and meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely. And that will probably be the next book, Damien, the how. But So this one, I could tell you, so one of the clear stories around this concept is with a company like Apple. So Apple's an interesting organization because they make technology, obviously, technology products. And when you meet kind of an Apple zealot, right? So there's these people out there who stand in line for hours to get the new phone when it releases, and you know, they're just kind of freakishly excited about Apple products. You've probably met these people. Well, I know you have, Damien, because you know me, and I'm one of these people. But there's something about Apple that seems to be bigger than just hunks of aluminum. You know, we don't kind of view Apple. So people like me, we don't view Apple products just as like a computer. It's like we're part of something bigger. And so I really wanted to explore why that was the case. And I did a bunch of research on Apple, and what I found was that whenever you stumble across an interview of the senior leadership of Apple, which doesn't happen very often, they actually don't talk very much, they're pretty quiet, but if you find a chance to hear what they have to say, and when interviewers ask them, why do you act the way that you do? So why does Apple behave the way that it does? Because it makes some pretty strange decisions when it comes to technology. They don't behave like other technology companies in many respects. And you ask them, why do they act the way they do? They always say the same thing. They always come back to this idea that the reason why they work the way they do is to make a better product. It's always about making a – so it's always this one thing. It's how, we won't play the game unless we can make a better product. And so what kind of dawned on me is that there's something about that kind of a noble cause. It's something bigger than money. It's something bigger than increasing revenues or share price or market share or retail stores. Or you know, it's bigger than all of those kind of traditional measurements of business. If we want to make something that actually is better. And so I think there's something that all companies can learn from this to say, what is your noble cause? What's your thing that's bigger than money? So what's the dent you want to make in the universe, to kind of use Apple terminology? You know, what big difference do you want to make? And I think that's something that all companies can take and really try to inject into their organization. Say, what is our noble cause? What hole would be left if our company were to disappear? I don't think many companies are very clear on that. And if they were, they'd have a lot more. It'd be much easier to connect people's work to meaning. Does that make sense?
And Josh, I really like that in your book, after each chapter, you ask the readers questions for them to think and consider what you share. So, for example, in your book, in page number 187, you have an ignition point to ask questions related to this. For example, how can I be more connected in the work that I do? How can I be more human in the work that I do? And how I can be more meaningful in the work that I do? So this is really a good opportunity for everybody who is listening to us to also consider these questions. Because these are maybe the answers to some of the questions to create this organization that we want.
I think you're right. I think you're right. Those are exactly the right questions to be asking. So how do I transform myself and my organization to be more connected, more human, more meaningful? It's a very powerful thing.
Yeah, and I really like in the distinctions that you make between architects and builders as a different way to look at organizations. Do you want to share with us briefly how did you come up with these distinctions of architects and builders? I really like it very much, to look at organizations from these lens.
Oh, sure. Thanks. Yeah. So I can talk a little bit about that. So the idea around this chapter was it's essentially that language itself is a powerful tool that we really don't utilize very well in our organizations. We kind of look at language as if it's somehow value neutral, that it's just kind of utility that we just kind of throw around. But I don't think it is. I think language itself, and I think the research bears this out, that the way that people think. If you can change the language that they use to speak, that actually changes the way that they think, because we think in the language. that we process the world. So it's actually a really powerful tool. And so this chapter around architects and builders, kind of understanding that language forms the way we think, is all about this dichotomy that we have in our organizations around leaders and followers. So we've got this kind of thing set up where we call some people leaders, we call some people followers, and we might not call them that outright or directly, you know, to their face, that you're a leader, you're a follower, especially not the follower. We use leader, the leader term more often, but we do have this kind of distinction in our organization. And what I was trying to get at with this chapter is that I think there's a hierarchy, there's kind of a destructive hierarchy inherent in the language of leader and follower. We naturally assign more value to a leader than a follower. And I think with the ways that the marketplace is shifting, those distinctions are becoming less valuable. Because what we're finding is the people who used to be called followers or your frontline kind of employees, maybe to use different language, those are the people that actually touch your customers. Those are the people who actually talk to and deal with and serve your customers. And so they're becoming very, very important in the branding, in the ambassadorship of your company, and to kind of degrade them even in a subtle way by kind of distinguishing them as followers and not leaders, I think is not very helpful. And so what I was suggesting in this terminology is that perhaps instead of leader-follower, what we do is we call people architects and builders. And we say some people are designers, and they're there to kind of orchestrate and strategize based on their strengths. So if you look at people's strengths, they're all very different. And some people have a very strong passion and interest in architecture and kind of the designing. And other people want to be out there with their hands, and they want to be building. And that one is not better or greater or lesser than the other. They're just different. And finding a way to kind of level the playing field through language is kind of what that chapter is about.
Yeah. It's interesting because in the work that I do, Josh, as a coach, I pay a lot of attention to language because I do believe also that we create our reality with language. And the language that we use in organizations, just you're talking about leader and follower, builders and architects and other words that we choose to use in our everyday work make a big difference in how we create not only our reality, how we relate to people, how we express our ideas, and how we also show understanding of other people. Yeah. So I believe on the power of language and bringing these organizations. I think there is, we can be talking about that for a long time. But we have only a few minutes to wrap up. Yeah. Before we go to the work that you are doing with your organization in terms of Work Revolution, is anything about the book that you want to share that you think it's important for people to know before we move on to the work that you are doing?
Let's see, that's a good question. You know, I hope that people who could pick up the book, that they kind of just leave with a bigger sense of clarity. So the hope is, again, that it was a really – it's an easy read, hopefully. It takes a lot of complex kinds of ideas and hopefully boils it down into a way that people read it and they say, oh, yeah, I've been noticing this. I just maybe didn't have the language for it. Or, this just connected the dots for me in a way that I didn't quite see before. So that would be my hope.
Great. I really enjoy reading the book very much, and I hope that people will get it and read it. It's highly recommended. At the end of the book, you talk about the Work Revolution as a growing tribe of passionate rebels who are reimagining and reinventing the way business is done in order to make work meaningful for everyone.
Yeah.
Very intriguing description. Can you tell us more about it?
Absolutely. So me and a couple of partners, we started this Work Revolution project last summer. And you can certainly visit us at workrevolution.org. It's essentially an advocacy group and a movement that exists to support anybody who's making work more human and more meaningful. And so what we do is on our website, we tell the stories of people who are actively out there kind of on the front lines doing innovative things to make work better for people, to kind of support this work revolution. And then the other thing that we really focus on is creating events where these work revolutionaries can actually meet each other, where they can come and connect in person and learn from each other and learn about the new kind of the best kind of cutting edge theories on how work is changing and how it should change. And so, like for example, last fall we did our first Work Revolution Summit in New York City, and it was spectacular. We're looking at doing hopefully another one in 2015 next year. So yeah, please come to the Work Revolution website at workrevolution.org. Connect with us. We'd love to keep you in the loop if this is part of your interest. We would love to have you in our tribe. So that would be wonderful.
How people can get involved? Again, what is the email or website so people can contact you?
Yeah, so it's just workrevolution.org.
That's easy to remember, workrevolution.org. And to contact you, if anybody has any question about you and to order your book, what they should do?
You can certainly find the book on Amazon. That's probably the easiest place to find it. Just search for either my name or Igniting the Invisible Tribe. You'll find the subtitle of the book, by the way, is Designing an Organization That Doesn't Suck. So people might might remember that. You can look for that as well. And if you want to connect directly with me, my website is joshallan.com, joshallan.com.
Great. Well, Josh, I want to thank you very much for joining us today. It was great learning about your book, about the work that you are doing. I hope in the future you can join us again. And for everybody who is listening to us, thank you for joining us every week. If you would like to share this program with people that you know, you can find the link in Blog Talk Radio in the name of the program Pasos. That means steps, or you can go to my website, goldbarconsulting.com, or in my social media, I always have the links available in LinkedIn or in Facebook. There are all different ways to find the link to be able to listen to this program later or to share this with people you may know that can benefit from listening. As the rest of the month, we will have Magda Mook, the CEO from the International Coach Federation. Magda will be talking about managing complex global organizations. It's going to be a very interesting show. And also we have Julio Laya, who has been one of the pioneers of coaching in the U.S. and in the world. Originally from Chile, he has been teaching coaching for many years. He has one of the most important coaching programs in the world. He's going to be joining us to talk about some of the global trends he observed. So don't miss our next programs. And thanks again for joining us. And Josh, one more time, thank you for being with us today.
Oh, thank you, Damien. It's my pleasure.
This is the end of Pasos, conducted by Dr. Damien Goldberg. Thanks for sharing this program with us today. We hope you find today's conversation challenging and stimulating. You can download this program and share with your colleagues in our website.